Welcome to the podcast of Central Church. This is our latest weekly message.
Hi everyone, great to be here with you again sharing tonight. Quick little disclosure, my youngest daughter Alice had her 12th birthday party yesterday at my place. I had 15 year six age girls at my place. So my voice is a little raspy, trying to talk, run the games, talk over all the noise. We had a fairy floss machine, and I think we went through over like half a kilo of sugar, which in hindsight was probably very irresponsible. but you can imagine the noise. I was trying to lift my voice over, and so it's a little bit raspy at the moment, but I've got my drink bottle to keep the vocal cords lubricated. We'll see how we go. Okay, so as you're probably well aware, we're now in a post-Easter period of the Christian calendar. And so Easter has come and gone with all the services that we've had and the chocolate and the wake that we had on Good Friday as well. And now we find ourselves in this post-resurrection period of the Christian calendar. And so this month, what we're going to be doing is looking at some of the post-resurrection stories that we see in the Gospels. However, tonight, I'm not going to be looking at a specific story rather than an overarching concept that relates to a lot of the stories, and that is the sacrament of the present moment. Now, the sacrament of the present moment, just to give you a bit of history, was the concept came about from the 17th century French Jesuit priest and mystic, Jean-Pierre de Caussade, which is probably one of the most French names you could think of. And as he was reading through scriptures, he noticed that while many of the appearance, post-resurrection appearances of Christ to his followers was very miraculous, they're also very much grounded in the everyday, in the common, in the usual. And so this got him thinking. And so he was looking at stories like Mary meeting Jesus in the garden and mistaking Jesus just for a simple gardener, or the disciples seeing Christ on the Emmaus Road and thinking he's just another fellow traveller, or then again, Jesus simply cooking some fish for breakfast on the shore of a beach as the disciples are pulling their boat in after a night of fishing. All very simple and common things in that day and age. And so this led to Jean-Pierre thinking to himself, I mean, this is an amazing thing. This is the risen Christ. He's just defeated death. It's God incarnate himself, yet he's appearing to his followers in such simple and everyday ways. And so Jean-Pierre asked himself, if Jesus is willing to appear to his disciples and his followers in the everyday, in this occasion, how then does God appear to us in our everyday throughout our lives? And it's not just on Sundays, it's not just when, you know, we're feeling the Spirit, but God is right here with us, right here, right now, in this very moment. All we need to do is engage with him. And so, and I love the quote I got up there for from Jean-Pierre. We must offer ourselves to God like a clean, smooth canvas and not worry ourselves about what God may choose to paint on it, but at each moment feel only the stroke of his brush. Isn't that beautiful? And so the question Jean-Pierre asks is, when do we recognize the sacred in the everyday? I just want to share a story just to kick off. And this is from what feels like another lifetime ago when I was back when I used to work in hotels and I was a manager in a hotel. And I remember just came in one morning doing my rounds, just make sure everything's okay. And I remember walking through the lobby of the hotel and on the ground was this old beat up looking notebook. And I remember it had like a dark red cardboard cover that was all creased, a corner was ripped off and it was spiral bound. And I remember picking up this notebook, flicking it open, just to see if there was a name or something in it. Couldn't see any ID, but I remember the handwriting was almost illegible and there were a few really badly drawn pictures in the notebook. Didn't think much of it, went back to my office, chucked it on my desk with the intention of taking it down to Lost Property, which is located in housekeeping, sometime later that day. I went about my day, it was a busy day, and probably about noon, a client came and asked to speak to me, and she was an exhibitor, and she was almost hysterical. The exhibit she was doing in the hotel was one of some of the original works of Dr. Seuss. And she had lost one of the most important parts of the exhibition, which was his own personal notebook, where he had written all of his ideas and sketched little pictures in, and she was beside herself. This thing was worth a lot of money, and she somehow must have fallen off the trolley as she was taking things upstairs to the exhibition room. And I was then, in my head, I realised this was a notebook that I found. And so I'm thinking, what have I done with this notebook throughout the day? And so I remember it was just in the way, it was on my desk. I didn't have time to take it down to Lost Property. And so I kept pushing it around. It was buried under papers at one point. And I'm pretty sure at one point my coffee cup was even resting on this notebook as well. It wasn't anything special at the time. But now, in this new light, this thing was like, it was like sacred. Like, wow, this thing is worth a lot. And, you know, so I did what every normal person would do. I told her I didn't have it and I sold the thing on eBay. And no, I gave it back to her and she was very, very happy afterwards. And so it's that kind of concept. When does something normal in our lives, something very ordinary, all of a sudden take on this new meaning because we see the sacredness in it? Where do we find God in the individual moments, the boring moments, the mundane moments of the everyday? And so just to go through this concept of the sacrament of the present moment, just so we're all on the same page, I just want to speak a little bit about what sacraments are. And so a sacrament is defined as a visible sign of an invisible truth. And so in Protestant Christianity, we recognize two sacraments. We recognize baptism, that's what we have done when we first come to faith, and the going under the water and coming back out, it's just a sign that represents the washing away of sins, or going underwater, being submerged and coming back up represents new life. And so it's an invisible sign of that invisible truth that resides within our hearts. The other sacrament we observe in Protestant Christianity is communion. And as we break the bread and we drink the wine, we remember how Christ's body was broken and his blood was shed for us as well. And so this sacrament of the present moment, it's realizing God is in every moment, which is reveals to us a larger truth that God is everywhere and at every time and always with us, whether we feel him with us or not. The Catholic mystics have a great way of talking about sacraments. They say, we begin with a concrete moment of encounter based in this physical world, and the soul universalizes from there so that what is true here becomes true everywhere else too. And that is significant. There is significance with this sacrament of the present moment, because with baptism, it happens just once. Sometimes we might have it done a few times just in case the first one didn't work. But usually it just happens once. Communion, we do every so often. We did it just this morning at church. But the sacrament of the present moment can be done as many times as there are moments in our lives. It can be done again and again. We don't need the right time or the right place or the right set of circumstances. We can do it wherever we are. Richard Rohr says, the purest form of spirituality is to find God in what is right in front of you. And so the sacrament of the present moment begins with our focus, and being self-aware of our focus as well. Because we need to also have that knowledge that we can't actually focus on everything all at once. And so think about it. When you go to the grocery store, when the doors open, you are exposed to thousands upon thousands of different products. But there is absolutely no way you can focus on every single product in there. You have your shopping list, and as you're going down the aisles, you're looking for specific products, or if you can't remember what they're called, like me, you're looking for a label or just a color scheme or something like that. Sure, some other random products might jump out and you go, oh, look at that, I might grab one of those, some Tim Tams or something like that. But by and large, we cannot focus on everything there. So what we give our focus to is very important. We want to make sure we're giving our focus to the right things. And also what we focus on, we also notice more as well. Have you ever gotten a new car and you thought, oh, this is a great car, it's pretty unique, and then you drive down the road and you notice every second person seems to be driving the same car as you. You focus on what is in your sight. This alludes to an ancient wisdom that humanity has been aware of for a very long time. What we give our focus to is important, and it very much dictates our lives. And we can see this written by Paul in Philippians in 4:8. He says, brothers, whatever things are true, whatever things are honorable, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue and if there is any praise, think about these things. So he's saying, focus on the things of God. Life can be chaotic. Life can get you down. But if we focus on God, keep our eyes on him, our lives can be full of light. God is not somewhere out there in a different geographical location. He is right here with us right now. Jesus also talks about this as well. In Matthew 6:22, he says, so if your eye is sound, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is not sound, your whole body will be full of darkness. There is a saying, we need to pay attention to what we pay attention to. And so Jesus is saying, if we are paying attention to what is just negative around us, what is missing, the gaps, the pain in our lives, then our lives will be full of darkness. But the opposite is true as well. If we look at what we do have, if we approach life with an air of gratitude and thankfulness and realizing the goodness that is in our lives as well, then our lives will be full of light. I see this almost daily, on a daily basis in my current role as a chaplain, talking to different high school students. And the attitudes these kids have about their lives is remarkable. And it's not necessarily governed by what is in their life, but it's more about their attitude and what they choose to pay attention to. And so I've spoken to some students with horrific lives, and their home lives make me want to cry. It's so depressing. But there's this little girl in year seven that I've been talking to at the moment, and she has a horrible home life, but she has this dream of becoming an interior designer. And she's about this tall. She's got those big glasses, and they're magnified, so her eyes are really big, and she's the cutest little thing. And most nights her mum is sick, and she has to put her mum to bed and cook dinner for her mum and things like that. And it's really sad, but she is so hopeful, and she tells me every day she wants to do the best at her studies, the best at school, so she can become an interior designer, so she can build a beautiful house and decorate it for her mum. And it's so beautiful. And then I'll speak to other students, and these kids seem to have it all. They see, you know, that mum and dad are together, they seem to have a good home life, a nice house, food on the table, they got the latest gaming system in their bedroom, but they can only focus on what they don't have, on what these other kids have that they don't have. And their life seems so much darker than like this little year seven girl that they talk to as well. We need to pay attention to what we pay attention to. I have to remind myself of this as well. When I walk into the different high schools that I work at. Do I just see the chaos there? Sometimes it's so easy, just like, oh, this is gonna be a big day. Or I've got cross country coming up, that's gonna be a big day. This is gonna be a big day, it's gonna be chaotic, and sometimes I feel like am I even making a difference? Like it was a drop in the ocean of a lot of the mental illness and trauma and things that a lot of these kids are going through. And I can get down on myself. Or I can choose to look for what is God doing in these schools? Where is God in the lives of these kids, whether they know him or not? Because God is in that moment with them, whether they know it or not as well. And trying to see what God is doing and engage with what God is doing. And so asking myself questions, where do I find love in unexpected places? Where has a student chosen to forgive instead of punish? And where has loneliness and isolation been overcome by friendship and openness? I want to share another quick story from school as well. And just a quick trigger warning. This one does briefly touch on the topic of suicide. So I just want to front load you with that. There's a boy I talked to at one of the high schools, and he's in year 11 now. I met him back when he was in year 10 last year. And he's an Islander boy. He's head and shoulders above almost every other kid in his year group. He's the biggest. He's the strongest. He's got a big smile, and he's got a quick wit, and he's not afraid to speak his mind. Big afro as well, great guy. And all the boys look up to him because he's the fastest, he's the strongest, he's the best at sports, and all the girls love him, all the girls want to be with him, all the guys want to be him. And so this kid, you know, he's got this bravado, he's starting to grow a beard already, he's kind of like, you know, going to be like a man's kind of man. And I remember we had a workshop run at the high school last year. And I didn't have anything to do with this workshop. I didn't organize or anything. I was just lucky enough to be sitting in the back of the room at the time. And in this workshop, just had all the boys from year 10. And one of the topics that the facilitators brought up was around suicide, because we know that's a big problem with teenage boys and adolescent boys. And it's something we're really trying to combat. And they asked if anyone had a story to share. And the room was silent for a while. It was awkward. And then this island kid, he put his hand up and he shared. And he shared deeply from his heart about his cousin who took his own life a couple of years ago. And as he was sharing this experience and how it made him feel, he allowed himself to cry in front of this room full of all these other boys, all of his other peers. The biggest, strongest guy in the room was bawling his eyes out in front of everyone else. And he said that in his home, you know, it's very masculine. You have to be a man. You can't talk. You can't even talk about his cousin anymore because we don't do that. It's in the past. He was never able to acknowledge these feelings going on inside of him. And after he shared, another one of the boys actually shared about someone close to him who also took his own life. And in the end, we had about four or five different boys in that room sharing about people that they've lost. And the whole room, including myself, was crying and tearing up. And it was tragic, but it was beautiful at the same time. And God was in there. I absolutely 100% believe God was in that room, allowing these boys to share, giving them the courage to share. And even though that bravado is still there with them, something has changed. Even now, I still talk to these boys, and even now, you know, there's that they see each other on a deeper level now. It's not just this surface super level, superficial stuff. They see each other for who they really are so much more than before. And this islander boy, he's still going through horrible things at home, but I catch up with him every few weeks. And if ever we bring up this workshop, you can see the tears come back in his eyes. It's just there below the surface. But I think there's healing happening in there as well. We're getting a lot of supports around him. And God is in there. God is in my workplace doing things in the lives of these kids. And God is in your workplaces and in your homes. God is in every moment. We just need to look for him and engage. But it can be so easy to overlook it, to look past it, to not notice it, to turn the other way. There's an author, Eckhart Tolle. He's a famous author, and he actually talks a lot about this sacrament of the present moment. And he says there are three main principles that it revolves around, and that is time, the ego, and surrender. And I just want to quickly share about each of these three concepts. So time. Eckhart Tolle says we need to make now the focus of our lives. And he's not talking about clock time. We know what clock time is. That's, you know, seconds, minutes, hours, days, weeks, months, etc. He's talking about psychological time. In our heads, where do we spend most of the time? Do we spend most of our time in the past, living in regret about things that we wish we didn't do or we didn't say? I know those things come up in my head all the time, and I cringe. Like, I can't believe I said that or did that thing. That was so embarrassing. Or do we spend a lot of our psychological time in the future, worrying about the future? And that's where anxiety comes from. He says what we need to do is spend as much time in the present as possible, because that is where we find peace. That is where we encounter God. And this, again, harkens back to that age-old wisdom that has come through humanity that Paul and Jesus was talking about. It's spoken about in other areas as well. It's spoken about in Buddhism. The meditation form called sati is about focusing on the now, being completely present in the moment. In the well-being training you have to do to work as a chaplain, we talk about having to ground kids in the present reality when they're going through panic attacks. And so we might be sitting in one of the meeting rooms and a kid's having a panic attack. And what are three red things you can see in this room? What's two things you can hear? What's something you can feel? We might give them a fidget toy or something like that. Whatever it takes to ground them in the present, because that anxiety exists in the future. Eckhart Tolle says all negativity is caused by an accumulation of psychological time and the denial of the present. Unease, anxiety, tension, stress, worry, all forms of fear are caused by too much future and not enough presence. Guilt, on the other hand, guilt, resentment, regret, grievances, sadness, bitterness, and all forms of non-forgiveness are caused by too much past and not enough presence. And so as people of faith, we should be constantly asking ourselves, are we dwelling in this present moment with God, or are we stressing about a future or living in a place of regret? Eckhart Tolle advises that when whatever the present moment contains, we are to accept it as if we have chosen it, always working with it and not against it. And that's a hard thing. Like when I first read that, that's a hard thing to do, to accept whatever present moment I find myself in as if I've chosen it. I've found myself in some horrible present moments, but to make peace with it. That's what he's getting at. We can make the now our friend and ally, not our enemy. And I love this quote. The present moment is the field on which the game of life happens. It cannot happen anywhere else. This is where God comes to meet us time and time again. Let me read that again. The present moment is the field on which the game of life happens. It cannot happen anywhere else. This is where God comes to meet us. The ego. Okay, so in regards to the sacrament of the present moment, the ego is not so much about the personhood, like we usually refer to the ego as, but it's a term used to sum up the manifestation of the human dysfunction that prevents us from giving our full attention to the now or God in this moment. It consists of things like fear and greed, abuse of power, and despite how it might manifest, the hidden motivating force is always the same. It's that need to feel special. It's that need to stand out. It's that need to be in control. It's that need for power, for attention, that need for just more of whatever it might be. And the thing is, with all those concepts, they're all future-based concepts. And so we say to ourselves, if I can only do this, I'll be successful. If I can only say this, I'll impress that person. If I can only wear this, I'll be accepted by this group of people. These are all future-based concepts of our ego. And this is important to understand because the key to becoming free of the ego is to be aware of it. Because the ego is a future-based concept, whereas awareness is a present-based concept, and the two are incompatible. And so awareness holds a power that is only concealed in the present moment. And so to center ourselves, to make peace with the present moment, and to put down our egos and burdens, even just for that moment, and encounter God in the here and now, can keep the ego and that dysfunction in ourselves at bay. The present moment is a sacrament because it holds power. And that's why, where we say to God, more of you and less of me. And there's, and now for surrender. And so we spoke about time being in the right, in the present moment psychologically. Spoke about ego, about shedding those burdens and being present in God right here, right now. And all that's great, but without surrender, it doesn't achieve much at all, because letting go and giving it to God is where we encounter God. And so surrender is a simple but profound wisdom, and it's about yielding, not opposing, the flow of life. And there's two parts to surrender. One is surrendering to God, and the other is accepting or surrendering to ourselves. And so just quickly, surrendering to God. Now, surrendering to God is just saying, I just can't be bothered, God, anymore. Or it's like, I just don't care anymore, God, you just do it. That's not true surrender. That's just a masked form of resentment. Surrender is an active choice to let go on our part, to choose God instead of resisting him. And it needs to be a choice, because God does not impede on our own free will. He respects us too much for that. The other part is accepting ourselves. And what this means is we need to recognize how we are in this present moment, because trying to be anything else other than what we are is an act of the ego. If we feel we need to be a certain way to come to God, then that's not us coming to God authentically. And so if we are angry, then be angry. If we are frustrated, be frustrated. If we are joyful, be joyful. But giving that to God is where the change happens, not trying to change ourselves so God will accept us. Acknowledging how we are feeling instead of pushing that away reduces fragmentation and leads us to wholeness. And so surrender is a process of actively being fully present in the moment and fully aware of God in the moment. But there is a trap in this as well, because often we feel like, okay, if I spend enough time with God, if I'm aware enough in this present moment, this will lead me to happiness. The goal here isn't happiness, because happiness is an emotion, and to any emotion sustained for a long period of time is exhausting. The goal here is peace. And so Eckhart Tolle says, but fear and pain will become transmuted into an inner peace and serenity that comes from a very deep place, from the unmanifested itself. It is the peace of God which passes all understanding, and compared to that, happiness is quite a shallow thing. And I remember that being quite revolutionary for me, because I always thought life is about happiness. A good life is a happy life. But now I have this understanding, a good life, I think, is a peaceful life. And if we can find peace despite the chaos around us, I think we can only do that with God in the present moment. And so just to finish up, I was thinking, like, how are we going to end this? Because I've been speaking about this whole sacrament of the present moment in a bit of an abstract way. And so I want to finish with something practical. And as you can imagine, it'll be something very ordinary, very common, very everyday. And that, I thought, would be another time of worship. I just want us to finish with one song. And this isn't a time where, I mean, you can if you want, stand up and sing. But this is also just going to be a time where, in this present moment, whatever you're feeling, putting the burden down and focusing on God in this present moment. Worship is a tool of the heavenly order and encompasses the three concepts that Eckhart Tolle talked about, time, ego, and surrender. It captures us in time, because as we sing the words, we are focusing on the words rather than allowing our minds to wander in the future or the past. It encompasses the ego. And this is the great thing about worship. It's a great equalizer, because no matter how we come to God, it puts us in our right place. And so if we come to God arrogant and full of ourselves and overly prideful, it places God at the head and us at the feet of God, where we belong. But if we come to God defeated and down on ourselves and insecure and anxious, it lifts us up to the feet of God, where we belong. Worship is a great equalizer. And finally, surrender. As we raise our arms to heaven, whether it be physically or metaphorically, it's fine, but giving ourselves to God and surrendering us in that present moment and listening to God as he says, come to me and find rest in my presence. And so Brian, I'll get Brian to strum along. I'm just going to read a blessing over us in regards to the sacrament of the present moment. And then, like I said, let's enter into a time of worship. We're just going to sing a song. I've chosen a very well-known song, I think fitting for this message. And let's just take this time. Whatever you might be going through absolute hell at the moment. If that's the case, I'm sorry, and I'd love to pray for you if that's the case. But let's try to put whatever burdens we are holding down and just focus on God in this present moment. So let me read this and then we'll get into the worship. God of the infinite moments, may we come to you as we are. May we place our burdens at your feet. May we lift our eyes to you alone. May we see you in the everyday, in the smiles of our children, in the embrace of our friends, in the stillness of the night, in the coolness of the breeze, in the warmth of the sun, in the song of the birds, in the sound of rain, in the smell of food, in the peace of sleep, in the words of scripture, and in the music of worship.
Thanks for listening. If you want to check out more about Central, visit us at centralchurch.org.au. Music by Chris D'Souza, a beloved member of Central.